is so hard to leave. You know, one thing just connects to another thing, so that Francis even said, well, I think you pretty much covered the whole Bible. When I sat down, I said, well, you know, it's hard not to connect. The more you begin studying, and I hope that the Lord is stirring you to study, Terry, because the more we study, the more connections we find, and that's what love is. You know, love is those connections within us. First of all, they have to connect somewhere inside of us. We can't connect outwardly unless we're connecting inwardly somehow. With ourselves.
It took me 58 years to realize that, so.
Yeah. With ourselves, and we can only manifest outwardly what we already got going on inside of us. We can't. We're a false.
Yeah.
Picture if we try to do that. Let's see. What I wanted to, you know, this idea of seeing through a glass darkly, but then face to face. That's what the open temple is about. And the love chapter, which is 1 Corinthians 13, and I am not going to read it, but you should all.
Please don't. My mother hammered that chapter in my head.
Because you should all, at this time, through all the times we've read it, it's probably the most beautiful chapter in the Bible. The love chapter. In the King James Version, they call it charity, but it's really love. Mm-hmm. One of the things that, if you turn to 1 Corinthians 13, one of the things that stands out to me in that entire chapter that I think really sums up the whole chapter is love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And then it goes on to say something very important. It says, love never fails. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. And then it says, for we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. So when we see with open face, nothing hidden, all things are revealed, and then we shall know even as we are known. That's what it says at the tail end of this love chapter. I was talking all about love. And then it gets to that part, and you think, well, what does that have to do with it? For we know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known. And love never, ever fails. Now, the word fail here does not have the sense of suggesting that we have not succeeded at something. But it's actually stronger than that. In that love was not driven off of its very course. There's a course we're on. There's a path that we're on. And love never fails means that there was a course, a path that we have set for us and that has not failed. In that sense, okay, that we've gotten off of our course or off of our path. Not in the sense, again, as I was saying, that we've not succeeded in something. Okay, that we've stayed on our path. And if we stay on that path, then love does not fall short. It does not happen in part. It happens wholly. It doesn't fall short. And it says all these other things pass away. Even knowledge passes away. So what they're saying is prophecies, tongues, knowledge is all in part.
It's a small part of it.
So, which in this veil here means to render something utterly useless. So it's no, the gifts don't serve us. Knowledge does not serve us. As we have moved on, we have ascended to something higher. Something that will serve us better. So, when that which is perfect comes, then that which is in part will be done away. This word perfect here has a sense of bringing something to completion. Again, not striving for excellence. Because excellence is viewed really in the eyes of the beholder. So our goal is not perfect excellence, but our goal is to bring something to the end of itself, like love. We come to the end of that. We are striving for that.
It completes a circle.
So yeah, completes a circle, just like really that does. So we stay on course with a view to the finish, okay, like watchmen on the wall. You see the end thing. And in fact, studies have found that when someone gazes at a distance at something, like for instance, if they're a runner and they gaze off at that point to which they're going to be running, they're gazing off at that distance, they actually run harder and feel less exertion because they don't let their attention wander. We let our attention wander. We get caught up on all these other things. Our attention wanders. So we don't stay focused on the end result. It's not that the end result is important. The process is important too. But we have to have a goal in mind. If you don't have goals, my husband used to say you need a short-term goal and you need a long-term goal.
And you need more than one.
And he would actually write down his long-term goal and he'd put it in his wallet and he'd take it out and look at it.
Your husband?
To remind him, yeah, my husband did that. One, I didn't even know he was doing this until one day I said, where is it? I want to see this.
But really, yes.
And he took it out of his wallet and he showed me. I mean, it was very personal to him. He was very embarrassed about it when I asked him. I almost, you know. And it was a quick thing that he did. Like, I don't even want you to see this, you know. This is my personal goal. You know, so it wasn't something he was advertising. It was something that he personally strove for. So what it did was it reminded him of the path that he was on. So we have to have goals. So anyway, so then when that which is perfect comes, we find ourselves arriving at the finish line, but we realize all that we accomplished to get ourselves there. So everything that we did to get ourselves there were all in part things. But is the part, the sum of the parts that make up the whole, right?
Yes.
So those parts are important. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly in your life doesn't matter. You get there somehow, some way. So not to focus on the good, the bad, and the ugly, or sit there and say, oh, woe is me.
Really?
You know, it's the bad stuff that got you there, too.
You got to let the bad and the ugly go.
Yeah.
If you don't, it will consume you.
Yes, but it was part of what made me.
That's right.
And for some reason, I needed to go on that journey. Not that I'm going to suggest you go over there to that bad thing and take it up and say, well, this is me, you know. But just to accept all of the parts that made you, that have brought you to where you are, that's okay.
Well, I think that's
a personal.
That's what is being illustrated, is that if you get wrapped up on knowledge or tongues or prophecy or whatever, then it kind of
consumes you.
Well, it diverts you from your true path.
Absolutely.
Well, it's not the whole picture, but we get focused on the little bitty parts of the picture. And they distract us.
Yes,
they do. You have to walk things out, I guess. And all these things can help you down the path, but they aren't the path itself.
Right, exactly. That's a very important point. Yes.
Yeah. So And you have to come to a point where all these, what we call facts, turn into a truth for you. Now, being able to communicate that to someone else may be not impossible, but it's not for somebody else. It's for you.
That's right. It's your journey. It's your journey. It's your yours to discover. So every day you should be waking up thinking, what is there to discover about me today? You're not the same old you were yesterday. You really aren't. You don't have to be. You don't need to keep walking down that maze, that path, round and round just like the rat in the maze.
Really?
You just keep going around that maze because that's all you know. Well, you're more than that.
It's a new day and it's a sparkle day. Okay, and I'll tell you what that is after a while. It's a joke. Okay.
Well, so anyway, these
it's a new day.
Yes, you know? It is. And these days, these previous days that we have are all part of our story. They're an end part. They're just parts of it. Yeah. That's all they are.
That's so pretty, and it reminds me of my little sister, Deborah, was raised in Tennessee, you know. And Daddy took her to Texas when she was like 4 years old. And he said they'd been in Texas a while. Everything is straight. There are no roads like in Tennessee. And she said, Daddy, would you just turn anywhere?
I'm tired of this road.
Long ways. It's long between the towns.
There's some places out west. Yeah,
I thought it was so funny.
Like that, yeah.
You just turn anywhere. That's funny.
But, you know, the story of Adam is an in-part story. So, I mean, Christ fulfills that. He completes that story. You know, someone said, I read recently, just yesterday actually, he said that Jesus had nothing to do with him being the Christ. I thought, oh my goodness, I could so argue that. It's like the apple denying the seed that brought it forth. You know, he paved the way. He stayed the course. He didn't get distracted from it.
That was meant for him to do that, Adam. Anyway.
Yes.
Well, that's a no-brainer. We would be here.
He came to bear witness of the Father. He walked this. Read the Gospel of John, the first chapter. Mm-hmm. That will, I think, change your mind if you read that thoroughly. Mm-hmm. That he had to come in the flesh as seed in the earth and die as that seed. Except a seed die can't be quickened. So Christ in us cannot be quickened unless that seed in us has died. And he was the first to the first fruits. We're supposed to be first fruits.
It has to fall and die.
Yes.
Goes in for a fall.
Yes, so he fell. He had to fall and do that for us. You know, he transformed our thinking. He transformed it. That's why he came too. He transformed. He was a rebel. He was a revolutionary. He transformed. He did. He transformed the thinking of that day, and he's still transforming our thinking. That's what I'm talking about. Can I just walk this out, Lord? You know, I know this stuff. I get it. But, you know, but it's a process. You know, they were looking for a king to set up a kingdom. They were looking for a literal king. Then he says, my kingdom is not of this world. They didn't get that. So that's why they rejected him. They wanted him to set up. They knew that the one that was coming would be a king and he would set up a kingdom. But they were, you know, as so many people do today, they look at this literally.
Yeah.
You know, he had to be that seed that was planted in the heavens and then come down, planted in this earth, and went deep into the earth. He emptied himself and he took on the form of a servant when he did that. When he emptied himself and went deep into the earth. When he died, he went further down, didn't he? Even further down. And he was made in the likeness of men. Yes. So he came in all ways that they didn't never figure. So he was a seed sown in dishonor. He was not born in the splendor of a king and a great man. He did not come as they thought he would come. They thought they had that all figured out.
Just like they do now.
But in the end, he came as a son in a lowly manger. That's really the laugh. That's really God's laugh.
Yeah.
That we would think so. I mean, really, the laugh's on us.
Well, they couldn't find anywhere to put him. You know, as an infant, they still can't find anywhere to put him.
Well, still the Bible.
To put him somewhere. You can't put him.
Yeah. And still the Bible is unclear of, you know, what's his name? Killed, was it Abel? Killed?
Cain slew
Abel. Cain slew. And then we don't know where that lineage, that's a good question. Doesn't say where the other kids came from, the other people. Was it just his lineage? Because Adam and Eve never had any more children.
Yeah, they did have Seth.
Well.
Yeah, they had more
They
children.
Did, and that was later on, though. This guy was grown. That's just what I'm saying. Those are, in the King James, Karen, they leave a lot of stuff out that's so questionable. And today, people are really questioning. They're reading it and questioning. They want to know. I got a guy that's asking me questions all the time. When I told him what Mom basically teach, and I said something about the 12 tribes correlating with and what she does, he was like, wow. I said, if you'd like to go sometime, you know, it's that guy I was telling you about morning. So he may come. He's an not just, he's a little bit of an intellect, not think like Morgan, but he's interested in this stuff.
Well, I'm trying to show the difference between the first man, Adam, and the last man, Christ. That our flesh is not of the same flesh. You know, there's a flesh of the birds, and the animals, and the fish, and our flesh. But there's only one spirit. Every seed has its own body. And that's what our hope is. It cannot come out of this natural seed. That seed has to die. Don't be. Paul said, there are terrestrial bodies and there are celestial bodies. And the glory of the celestial is what I'm trying to point out here. This is the glory of the celestial. It's one thing and the glory of the terrestrial is another. That's another thing, the terrestrial. If you remember what I had shared before. And so is the resurrection of the body, which is sown as a natural body, as it was in Adam, but raised a spiritual body. It was in Christ. So what was sown in dishonor is raised in glory. That's this picture. Remember I said a seed cannot be quickened unless it first dies. So as we have borne the image of the earthy, which was sown in dishonor, we also bear the image of the heavenly. And remember Paul said, behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. And that in a twinkling of an eye. We shall all be changed. So that is that mystery of Christ within you, which is the hope of glory. That is transforming us. The hope of the glory is transforming us. The Christ in us is transforming us. And that can we see it that if we pull away from all these parts that we thought that we were, that brought us to where we are, and they're all done away with, they vanish. We become unmasked and naked before him as this earthly house of this tabernacle is dissolved. And then we are left with a building not made with hands. That's what I'm trying to show you here too. We're going to get into that. I had made a diagram last time, but I changed it just a little bit for this one. And actually I had these three eyes. These are your two eyes and this is your mouth. Spirit, soul, and body. These three were connected. And then I made a mistake, and when I put them down the circles, I said, oh, I didn't connect them.
It was meant, though.
But it wasn't a mistake.
In your mind.
Yes. I thought at first it was a mistake, but it's not really a mistake.
No.
I was trying to, these are eyes.
Yes.
Your spirit, your soul, and your body have an eye. So that is your open face, which is your true identity. This is the one from Revelation, actually. So I had that as a calf. It started off as an ox in Ezekiel. This is really a flying eagle. This is man, and this is a lion. So, and then we have the tribes around the perimeter of it, too. But if this is your identity that you already had with him in the heavens. You know, when he created you male and female. Male, female. Your male part is your spirit, female is soul. This is neutral, body. He said, be fruitful, multiply, go forth, and fill the earth with what? With his seed. And not just any seed, a holy seed. A seed after its own kind. Now, every seed has its own body. What is sown as flesh is flesh. What is sown as spirit is spirit. And so that's what they're talking about. There's a glory of the telestial, and there's a glory of the celestial. Celestial. And what I've tried to pick here is a merging of the two. You know, right now, flesh and spirit are on two parallel lines. But they are beginning to merge. They are beginning to come together until they're one line. So as we bear the image of the earth, we also bear the image of the heavenly. So here you see a square. You see the temple of God. That temple, which is over there on the wall, this speaks of this outer court as your body. And then you have this area here, which is covered over, very heavily covered over with four coverings. So it has two chambers. In my house are many mansions.
Could be so you have your team.
Body. And in here you have holy place and holiest of all. There's two chambers there. This is your soul and spirit that are covered. And you can see that in the natural, yeah. Can't you? Because your soul and your spirit are covered within you. Your body is what everyone sees. This is what everyone sees. This is outward.
Yeah.
This is all what's inward. Your soul and spirit are inward. Though he's bringing them outward, you know, to project him. So anyway, this is a form of the tabernacle. Remember, Adam was a living form. And the four-cornered square represents foundational grounding, structure, and order, the square. And it also represents the left side of your brain, which is all the L's, lateral, literal, language, law, linear. So the left side of the brain is concerned with the past and the future. And it's also, its focus is on me. Therefore, this is where judgment is. Judgment actually is right in there, right here. Soulish realm. Where we judge. It's how things appear to me to be. That's what judgment is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the seed of the ego. Can't have judgment without ego.
But it's based on appearances.
Well, yeah.
And you know that when you listen to the television, you only get part of the story. And so we make judgments based on that little bitty part. We don't have the whole picture. So right away we're judging. Anyway, it symbolizes, the four corners symbolizes the four cardinal directions, north, south, west, and east, the four seasons, summer, winter, fall, and spring, the four elements, fire, earth, air, and water, and it's the four corner fundamental foundations that govern our natural and spiritual lives. This is not only natural, but spiritual. The law of the Lord is perfect. So this speaks to the law of the corners. You come up against that corner. The law of the Lord is perfect. What does it do? It converts the soul. And that word, perfect, the law of the Lord is perfect. It means to complete, not to condemn or think of ourselves as falling short of something. but it completes us. We're talking about the law of the Lord here now. We're not talking about the law of man. The law that most of us operate under because we're so, it's so visible to us in this world. The law of the Lord is written on our hearts. It's not so visible. You know, we have to go inward to find that law of the Lord. So, but outward out here, around the body, out there, you've got plenty of laws going on and judgments going on.
Well, there has to be a willingness to have that right brain interjection. And it, when it hits you, because I go through that stuff. When I'm a little bit upset, then I go, it feels better if I think of it another way. How can I find a goal to try to fix this, or can I fix it, or is it something I can fix or control, really? I mean, I do that, and then if I can, I find an easier solution that is comfortable for me and whatever, the other person, let's just say, it's an issue like that, that I feel better. I'm not so angry, you know, if I talk to people.
Right. Connection. Well, I mean, the law is good. The law of the Lord. Let me make that emphasis. The law of the Lord is good. That is what changes us. That's what transforms us. That's what converts us. You know, and the law of the Lord touches our physical and our spiritual realms and brings us to the end of ourselves.
Kind of the way I look at it is the law converts the soul and grace converts the spirit.
Yeah.
Because nothing else can convert your spirit but grace.
Well, now I am going to say this, that I think it's an in-part thing that will bring us to the whole. Not to focus on that. You know, not to focus on the law per se. Okay? It just brings us. It brings us along. It brings us to Christ, who's the author and finisher of our faith. It just brings us along. Okay, it's a part of us, and that is a part of our process. But it's not the end result. Because superimposed or around that square of the law is the circle. And that represents infinity and unity. Wholeness without beginning. You can't find the beginning of this circle, and you can't find the end of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any particular direction. And that actually represents the right side of your brain, which is more inward. It's intuitive, it's perceptive. It includes nonverbal communication. It is social. It's emotional. It's the feelings of connection to each other comes out of that right side of your brain. And it's really only aware of the present. It's that creative side of you too, which gets into the present. It puts you in the present. It focuses on we. So that's where love is, that connection with each other.
Yeah, it gets rid of the big I.
And it represents timelessness. You know, with the law, you've got time. But with the circle, no time. And, you know, mysteries are finished at the same time the time is finished, you know. If you're in the present, there's no awareness of time. Is there?
No.
If you're really absorbed in the present, are you aware of time?
No.
Not really. Not unless you're easily distracted. So you can't measure it, but it really is the polar opposite of law, as we perceive law anyway, as we perceive, because I think that he's bringing us to an understanding of the law of the Lord, our perception of laws.
Well, unfortunately, just because of what you're saying, you cannot, at least in our human brain, we can't separate law and judgment. But if you look at it, you know, from the original point of view, they weren't law.